Yo, Matej, early morning for me, late for you. Gotta love 8 hours of time difference. What are you up to?
I'm not sleeping yet. That's what I'm up to. And what actually watching EuroLeague basketball, because we're in the midst of round one of playoff basketball right now. Barcelona is playing Olympiacos right at the halftime mark, with Olympiacos being up by 9 points. But hey, we good. We made it. Sorry for not making it on the weekend, but I was totally out of order. I had no voice. Wouldn't have made sense at all. So we kind of late to the party, but we're still partying. The later the party, the better the guests. So here we are, my friend. Here we are.
Fantastic. Yeah. So I think we want to talk through the playing games and maybe the first couple of games that we have seen now in the basically series. Let's start off. Virtus won against Efes, something that at least I didn't have on my radar. I thought Efes was too hot coming in. And guess what? Virtus actually prevailed and Efes didn't look very good. So that was for me definitely an upset. But yeah, what ensued after that, got the, how do you say, the wrong end of the stick against Baskonia, who basically took care of business. Baskonia lost against Maccabi, who looked very strong in their first game as well, in their series. But yeah, so Baskonia ultimately took care, but I think the bit of a down point in the whole thing now going into that series against Real, where they played and lost their first game already, is that they lost Chima Muniki in the play-in tournament. So what was your first or kind of impression of this playing games? There is a lot of talk about it. It's basically very similar, if not the same, as the American version of it. What was your impression?
I really do like the idea of a play-in tournament. It gives the lower seedings another edge to compete, and it gives teams that might have been injury riddled at the beginning of the season still a chance to compete for a playoff spot. And yeah, it makes this whole playoff race a little bit more exciting, a little bit more fun, even further. And I actually did watch the game Efes against Virtus, number 9 versus number 10 seed. It was a playoff atmosphere like always in Istanbul, and it was a typical playoff basketball game. Very low score affair, considering the amount of shooters and scorers you had on the floor, like Shane Larkin for Efes or Marco Bellinelli for Virtus. And I feel like at the end of the game, the right team did prevail, although, and you already mentioned, Virtus end up losing against Baskonia, who were beaten down by Maccabi in the first place, 7 versus 8 seed. But overall, I think, great implementation. Another two exciting games, three exciting games, actually. And good for EuroLeague basketball that they adapted to what the NBA has been implemented as well.
Well, definitely excitement is there. I think the criticism around it was we play so many tough games, plus 30 every season, and then everything could be determined by one game. But yeah, guess what? It's a chance also for a ninth and a 10th seed actually to still slide into it and cause some havoc against one of the higher ranked teams. So yeah, I do like the idea overall as well. I definitely give some excitement. I think overall though, what's still interesting is that the playing game is a one game affair. Then you have a series and another series, and then you basically you have a playing game which basically is decided by one game, then you have a series, and then ultimately the final four, which is also a one game affair, where we did see a lot of exciting outcomes in the past as well, because usually the better team should prevail in a series versus a one game affair, where you do have some outliers, I would say more likely outliers than in the series. All right, first some music. All right, Mate, which one was on your radar? So we had a few games already.
Yeah, I would start with number one versus number eight seed, which ended up being Real Madrid, obviously, versus Baskonia. Baskonia did have a ferocious win against Virtus, with Marcus Howard going off in the third quarter. Like, if you haven't seen the third quarter of Marcus Howard played, I mean, that was basically his best Stephen Curry / Dame Lillard impression you can have. This guy was on fire. But Baskonia, and you already mentioned Chima Muniki being out now, at least for the first couple of games in this series, Baskonia had no chance from the get-go against Real. I mean, Real was taken care of in the first business, leading by as many as 12 points, and subsequently made this a no contest affair. I mean, yeah, halftime score was 48-37, and it went in the wrong direction for Baskonia ever since that. Pretty easy first win for Real, I would say. They took care of business, and it feels like Madrid is going to be the first team reaching the Final Four if Baskonia doesn't have an answer for this machine from Madrid.
Yeah, Musa actually had 16 points. Poirier pulled down 7 boards and combined that with 10 points. So, and it was the usual, as you call it, the machine. Campazzo had 10 points. And actually, Sergio Llull hit 2 triples and became the competition all-time leader in 3-pointers made during that game as well. You mentioned Marcus Howard actually once again putting his scoring recklessness on display, but he seems to have a bit of an injury as well. There's rumors about a knee injury on his side. So watch this space, even with now Chima Munike, who we at least understand is not going to come back, but... yeah, that seems to be a one-sided affair, at least how we can see it at the moment. The other one was actually, at least my yesterday, Maccabi went into Athens. And they stole a game there. They won 91-87, even though it didn't look like it. Panathinaikos was quite hot straight away. Even Vildoza pulled in some shots after all of that media controversy that happened or started off in the last at least 1 or 2 weeks. Him not being very happy around his position or where he is at the moment and what kind of playing time he's been given. I thought it was quite interesting that he did have some playing time and put in some points. I thought it would have been probably the end with those little videos. Anyways, Bonzi Golson had 18 points, Lorenzo Brown had 16, and Wade Baldwin had 15. But he did leave the game with an injury, so watch this space on what's going to happen here. Electrifying Josh Nibo, presumably becoming a Slovenian teammate at some point of Luka Doncic, had 12 and 8 rebounds. Good. On the hosting side, Matthias Lesor was once again the motor. I mean, he had incredible downward drives from even the three-point line, some hammer dunks. He had 22 points, which is incredible, actually. But then, yeah, what else was there? Kostas Lucas had 12 points and 13 assists. But then we also only had Marius Grigonis and Jerian Grant with 11 each. So I think, at least from my perspective, they need more from Nunn or from other players that are going to step up now big time. And maybe it's an opportunity, and maybe it was a bit of a surprise, because to be quite fair, Maccabi is a team not to be underestimated, especially when, at least for me, their backcourt is healthy. And let's see. I mean, that was at least my impression of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that was a very, very impressive win by Maccabi. You already mentioned Matthias Lesor with 22 points. I mean, he started off the game with 9 for 9 from the field, and missing, although, his last two shots, both layup attempts where he might not have gotten fouled. But yeah, I think that the neck breaker was his 4 for 11 from free throw range. You already mentioned Kendrick Nunn, who, yeah, well, he didn't perform to at least his standards from the last few weeks. I mean, he only scored 8 points. He was 4 for 4 from 2-point range, but you could sense that he wasn't his usual self. Obviously, Maccabi played great defense. Kostas Lucas, amazing game, but yeah, it's up to other players. Looking at Juancho Hernan Gomez, for example, or Kostas Dinos Mitoglou, who, yeah, all right game. I mean, Hernan Gomez, he did have 9 rebounds, for that matter, but still, you feel like with the depth that Panathinaikos has, there should have been other players stepping up. Which at least Luka Vildoza did in the first half. But, I mean, yeah, Bonzi Colson in the last quarter, he was just phenomenal. Amazing game. And, I mean, every player that went in for Maccabi, he did provide some quality minutes, whether it was Tamir Blatt orchestrating and finding the open man, or whether it was Lorenzo Brown with his usual amazing point guard abilities. Overall, a great win, but let's see what the injury report says from Wade Baldwin. It's going to be a very interesting series, although I have to mention there were another two, I'm sorry to say, bogus bullshit calls by the referees, where Wade Baldwin ended up getting fouled at midcourt and threw a prayer upwards toward the rim, and they gave him 3 points, like in the act of shooting fouls. Come on, it's ridiculous. It's playoff basketball. It shouldn't come, a game like this, a series like this, shouldn't come down to nitpicky 3-point bullshit type of shots caused by the referees. It's just, I don't know where they did get the memo from, but they immediately should stop this, calling this bullshit prayers. I'm sorry. That was my rant of the day.
Yeah. To cap it off, and I'm a bit late to this one because, it's 6 o'clock in the morning for me here.
You were late. I mean, yeah, to cap it off, game just finished, AS Monaco versus Fenerbahce Istanbul. Game went to overtime. Wow, what a game it has been. I mean, for Monaco, Ilie Okobo with 19 points, their top scorer. You had Jordan Lloyd, you had Mike James doing Mike James-ish stuff. But as we said, Mike James is best when he gets others involved, which wasn't the case. So Fenerbahce did quite an impressive job. And eventually it was Fenerbahce led by Nigel Hayes-Davis with 19 points and 7 rebounds. And Nathan Sestina with his, at least from a scoring output, best EuroLeague game so far. 16 points, 6 rebounds. Very solid contribution, especially from 3-point range, going 4 for 5. And Nick Calathes, who he had a very solid game, again, great defensive efforts, great rebounding, but he almost shot Fenerbahce out of the game with his missed free throws. He was 1 for 4 very late into the fourth quarter, but eventually Fenerbahce did pull off the I would call it an upset, at least for the first game in Monaco, and now has home court advantage. Very interesting game, very intense.
Yeah, I'm just catching up on that, but for me, from the outside, not having seen much of the footage yet, it is not so surprising. Fenerbahce is, well, okay, I'm contradicting myself here. I'm looking at their last six games and there were three losses in there. Monaco definitely the hotter team, having only lost one in the last five. Yeah, maybe it is something that also that we have seen last year. If you remember that Partizan versus Real series, where basically everyone won the games on away courts, let's call it. And then the season turned with that infamous malice.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's only one game down now for every team. I think that, to me, that the most surprise out of all of these games so far, and we have Barcelona playing Olympiacos right now, and it doesn't look good for Barcelona, by the way. They're down by 11 points midway through the third quarter. I feel like the W of Maccabi against Panathinaikos was, at least for now, the most impressive win.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, yeah, you shouldn't underestimate this team. We said it during the whole season. Impressive, incredible job by players and coaching staff. But yeah, it's playoff basketball, and the team that has the most desire, that has the best game plan and executes it the best, usually does have a great chance of winning this series. But hey, first game, let's feel each other out. But second game is usually the one that where push comes to shove, and the series gets even more exciting.
Yeah, I would even put one more on top here, because I gotta actually say that the game of Maccabi against Baskonia, where they won super convincingly, it was 113-85 win. I mean, Baskonia is not a team to roll over, yeah? And this was a close to 30-point win. So for me, combined with this upset now, or, well, at least this impressive win, I think they are definitely, they have put something on display here, those guys. Impressive to to see. But as I also mentioned, let's see what that injury of Wade Baldwin is going to surface to become. And it would be great if he's going to continue being in the game. And because something that basically puzzles me almost every year when we arrive at playoff time is the frequency of games. I mean, it's incredible. They play every second day, yeah, pretty much. So if we look ahead, while the game Barcelona versus Olympiacos, by the way, Barcelona down by 10 at the moment, but seem to get a bit of momentum. Yeah, tomorrow we have another couple of games, and so on and so on and so on. It's really hot season right now for EuroLeague basketball. Any things that you are looking forward to in the next round? Well, sorry. Any things that you're looking for in the second game of each of those series?
I think Ergin Ataman already mentioned in the press conference after the game that if Panathinaikos doesn't make the Final Four, he's going to step down as coach of Panathinaikos after the season. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Panathinaikos comes out of the gate. I mean, they've been fierce. Incredible atmosphere in Athens. Incredible. But the pressure is now on. I mean, it's just one game down, and it feels like it's already the do or die game in game two. I don't look too much at Real versus Baskonia, to be honest with you. It would certainly surprise me if Baskonia is challenging Madrid in that regard. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this game Barcelona versus Olympiacos ends up. I feel like Monaco game was so tight versus Fenerbahce. Monaco will take care of business in the second game. So it's going to be a tie moving to Istanbul. But yeah, I feel like the Panathinaikos versus Maccabi is going to be the one game that I'm really looking most forward to.
Yeah, and for me also that Fenerbahce Monaco series so far seem to be very good. But I gotta say, even though I'm probably gonna break your heart a bit, I see Olympiacos maybe as a bit of a favorite in that series. Not because of that score that we are seeing on the ticker right now, but Olympiacos is a very, very feisty team. But okay, they're down by 6 now, so they're making a run. I think I very soon need to let you go. It's only the third quarter. Maybe a bit of music, and then a couple of quick fire, little small rumors and latest sports updates. So let's stick with one question in basketball. What about the rumor? So what about the rumor about Lesor potentially reuniting with Partizan? you mentioned an interesting scenario. Let's say Ataman does lose that series for whatever reason. Would you see a scenario where Lesor then says at that point, fuck it, I'm going to leave?
It depends on who's the replacement is. I mean, if there's a, I mean, there's numerous coaches out there. I'm just mentioning because of Sieg right now. It's Itudis, for example. It's Gaiola. There's many great coaches out there that would love to get a chance to coach at Panathinaikos. So if such a high caliber coach is in the runs, why would he go? But obviously, I think the relationship between Matthias Lesor and the Partizan fans has been a very special one. He was a very vital component to their last year's success. And he's definitely a player that they need. And I don't know where else they get this type of caliber of play from. So, yeah, it's still very far-fetched. But let's see. Very interesting, yeah, sure. Very interesting.
You got one for me in basketball, or I want to switch to a different sport?
I mean, yeah, what if there was one player moving from Barcelona to Madrid, or vice versa, from Madrid to Barcelona, which player do you think could it be? Because we've had this scenario, because I just witnessed him scoring, Nicolas Laprovittola, who was with Real Madrid and now is Barcelona. But is there any player that you can see end up playing for the other side next season?
It gotta be someone who is not as ingrained maybe in the tradition. It's gonna break people's heart completely. So what I mean with that is, for me, it's not someone who played his youth there or is like an all-time great in brackets. So it could not be a Sergio Llull or Rodriguez or people who are going to retire very soon, like Rudy Fernandez after this season. So he's not in contention. But I think, why not a Mario Hezonja?
Back to Barca?
Why not? Yeah, why not a Musa? I would be thinking about these types of players who, yeah, obviously they're affiliated and committed, but are they as ingrained again in this tradition of what the club potentially means or not? So I think maybe those two players, or Yabusele.
Nah, I was thinking more of Willy Hernan Gomez, who, after a okay start, I mean, he had his rocky moments with Barcelona, and he already played with Madrid. Yeah, I feel like there has been rumors about him being disgruntled of his role in Barcelona. I could see him leaving after one season, especially if Madrid loses, let's say, a Walter Tavares for the NBA, for whatever reason, or for Dubai. You know, they would need a replacement, and I think with his physical attributes, Willy Hernan Gomez is one of the players that they might would look at. Definitely.
I think, it could be a possibility, but what you said about La Provitola, I think it's more, the possibility might be a bit even higher, because I think these national bonds between, let's say, Argentinians or also the Spanish in some regard, because there was some Ricky Rubio, not turmoil, but definitely had an impact in the sense of some people loved it, some didn't love it so much because he's taking away playing time and a spot on the roster. But I think it makes maybe Barcelona more Spanish in the backcourt, potentially. And it could be conceivable that La Povitola makes a move. But it could be also somewhere completely different than Real Madrid. Let's see. Watch this space. You mentioned something interesting, Dubai. But Dubai in the men's, what's the situation actually? Before I talk too much crap, they play in the ABA, which basically means they gotta go through the whole tournament, and only the ABA winner is a qualifier for the EuroLeague. Potentially at this point, let's just spin out this scenario without a license at that point, and probably is going to take away a spot from Zvezda or Partizan if everything were to continue as it is, and if the whole situation with Cheska Moscow, because they have that license, is still going to be the same. We spoke about that in a previous podcast as well. I at least would love, under normal circumstances, have a Russian team back in the mix, but or they're gonna at that point expand because they see a market here. But I think it's not conceivable yet that any of those big names is gonna actually sign up for Dubai. What's your take on that? What's your thought process? So what I'm saying in essence is that Dubai is definitely still one, two, probably 3 years away.
I mean, I'm biased when it comes to such a far-reached team from the Middle East playing in EuroLeague. I'm not for it, gotta be honest. I think if Dubai is seriously considered to be one of the next destinations, they will have to expand the league. And they will have to think of new possibilities on how teams not constantly travel there. So half or all of the EuroLeague teams. We already talked about splitting EuroLeague into two conferences for that matter, for example. I think you have Paris now entering the mix. You have both teams, Monaco and Asvel, struggling a little bit under this squeak saga with them not being able to at least raise all of the money that they've been provided due to sponsorship last week. So Asvel already communicated they're going to lose apparently about 25% of the budget. Monaco might be next in order to think of a scenario like this. So, and as already mentioned, it usually comes down to money, and Dubai does have plenty of it. So, I don't know. Mixed feelings. Especially when it comes to very good to great fan bases that might be affected by organization from Dubai entering the EuroLeague stage.
It's going to be very interesting. But you also mentioned earlier there's a couple of big shot coaches around there. So why not potentially hire one of them to actually start to build your culture, or at least build up a system and expectation. If money is not the problem, let's see.
Certainly. I mean, it's going to be a high prolific coach, make no mistake. If a team is going to play in Dubai, this team is going to be stacked. This team is going to be really, really good, and it's going to be interesting to see what players, from what EuroLeague players and former NBA players, are willing to play there. It's going to be very interesting to see.
I had one last question before we're going to wrap it up. You heard about the Marcel Hirscher comeback in skiing.
I read about it today, yes.
It's incredible. So for all of our listeners who are not maybe so into skiing, we're talking about the probably best skiers. We're talking probably about the best skier all time. Why do I say that? I mean, there's always different ways to measure that. But we're talking about a guy who won the World Cup, which basically is the combination of all of the skiing races in all of its varieties. All of those points together. And then at the end, you get a so-called big crystal ball, which is the World Cup. Yeah. This guy won it 8 times in a row. I mean, there was no one close to that. And he then basically retired. I think it was 2019, because he kind of didn't want to go through the grind once again in terms of training, and seemed to have lost a bit of the fun. So he won 67 World Cup races. He was on the podium 138 times, and he won 7 world titles. So there is also the so-called World Championship, which is just a single race. It's not just the World Cup, and 4 silver medals. So he is, with that, the most prolific, the most decorated skier as well. So with all that, he does have an interesting history or family background, let's say. Because he has a Dutch mother. So dad is an Austrian, and he raced for Austrian all of his career. And now he is attempting a comeback because he wants to come back and race for fun. And instead of taking away a spot and resources and money from the Austrian Skiing Federation, he's going to start for the Netherlands. I'm definitely a big fan when he was racing. I mean, obviously it's fantastic if someone wins so many races, but it's a very, very interesting decision. I don't know. What was your thought around that?
I don't want to take any enthusiasm out of it because it is an awesome story, but I mean, he retired in 2019, so he hasn't been racing for 5 years now. And I mean, it is a different sport now. I mean, even skiing developed to a certain degree. There's new players, so to speak, circling around. And yeah, I mean, for him, just driving for fun, or skiing for fun, I mean, yeah, I don't make too much out of it. It's a nice story, but I mean, it's not like Michael Jordan saying, I'm back and I'm competing for NBA championships and MVPs. I mean, it's him saying, yeah, or at least that's what I took out of the article. It's, yeah, I want to drive again. I want to try it. And occasionally, if I'm engaged, I'm going to race downhill. So more in that direction. But hey, as you mentioned, he's probably the best, or at least one of the best skiers of all time. He certainly has the pedigree. And if there's one former athlete to do it, it's him in this sport. So yeah, we'll figure it out. And Austrians are pretty flexible when it comes to their who they root for. we know how to do it.
All right. Nice. Anything to add, Matej, before we wrap it up?
No, man. No, let's wrap it up, man. 6 more minutes to go. Barcelona versus Olympiacos. I'm jittering right now, and it's, yeah, better late than never, I would say. Was fun catching up with you. Next time to.
Definitely, certainly. Let's watch what's happening. 6 minutes to go. 6 points. Deficit for Barcelona. Now it's 8. Yeah, guests, you can find us on the usual socials that you find in the notes as well. X, Instagram, you can write us an email. We are always happy to get some feedback, some consideration, some thoughts, what you want to hear about. And talk to you next week as well. Have a great week ahead.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye.